is Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it on Live Bet Sunday. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. He's Will Hill. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Give us a follow over on X at not the Will Hill for Will at Dustin Sweetelson. For me and, of course, VSiN Live for the channel. Appreciate you joining us, however you may be consuming the show. Sirius XM Channel 158, YouTube TV, and, of course, the VSiN Watch app. A lot going on today when it comes to sports, and kind of buried in that since we began the show with all of the live action we have was a big NBA trade that went down earlier today, Will. In case you missed it, Desmond Bane from the Memphis Grizzlies was traded to the Orlando Magic for 4 first-round picks, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Cole Anthony, 4 first-round picks, including a 2029 first-round pick swap. And a big move for both parties where a couple signals are being sent. One, the Orlando Magic are looking to capitalize on a window in the Eastern Conference where they believe that they can contend with the best teams. And they add a guy in Desmond Bane coming off a really good year, 19.2 points per game, 6.1 boards, 1.2 steals, shot almost 40% from three. And then the Memphis Grizzlies, Will, the question is this the beginning of a sale and a rebuild coming for Memphis, who was in the postseason a year ago?
Yeah, by the way, Louisville takes a 5-3 lead over Arizona. They have rallied here. They have scored 3 times in the eighth, and they have runners on the corners with one out. As looks like it was a busted squeeze play. The runner from third breaks from home. They got him in a rundown, and he is going to be tagged. Wow, they dropped the ball. He scored. Oh. It is now 6-3. The wheels are coming off Arizona big time here. And the runner that was on first moves all the way up to third in the rundown. So looks like Louisville is going to knock out Arizona. Terrible job here from Arizona.
That's 2 big comebacks for Louisville, here. Too.
Yeah, big time. A lot to unpack here. I'll start with Orlando. I probably wouldn't have done it. I'll start with that. Just saying it out loud. 4 first-rounders unprotected for Desmond Bane. Unless you think you're trading for a piece that's going to put you over the hill here for a championship, you don't give up 4 unprotected first-rounders. Just ask the Knicks with Bridges, the Timberwolves with Gobert, who, you know, that trade's probably worked out better than most people think. But still, you're trading for a player that's not going to win a championship, and you're giving up all this stuff. It's too much. That being said, these teams that are in the East that are good, a couple things. You feel like you're stuck and there's only one way to get unstuck, and that's to make a big splash. Is this enough of a splash to get unstuck? Maybe. And maybe you get to a point where you're the 3rd, 4th, 5th seed consistently here with Banchero, with Wagner, and now with Bane. In a week in the East, you can say, you know what, those picks aren't going to be as valuable because I'm going to be a good team. That's fair. But these teams see the Pacers and say, you know what, good story, good team, but it's not this is not the 96 Bulls. This is not, the 2017 Warriors or the 2001 Lakers. That we can beat the Pacers. The Celtics aren't a factor. The Bucks, will see what they do with Giannis. The East is wide open. So I'm tired of being the 8th seed. I'm tired of getting my head caved in the first round. Let me trade for Bane. I'll try to get out of purgatory here. And you know what? I'm a franchise that hasn't had success in forever. I can look up and I can be in a conference finals. All right, I probably gave up one asset too many. So I'm just going to pull the trigger, and hopefully my picks aren't that good and they'll be worth it. Chances are I'm probably not going to be the GM 4 or 5 years from now anyway, just with how these things work. So I'm going to take a swing. I get it. I don't love it. From the Memphis standpoint, probably, I'm not an expert on the cap. I don't know if you are, but
no.
It sounds like these teams can't have a big three. When you got like a Jackson, a Morant, and a Bane, you can't pay all of them the max. So you got to just kind of pick your poison and at some point take your medicine and get off somebody. And this is a hell of a chance to reset and just get assets, whether you want to trade that for a star, whether you want to trade Jackson and just rebuild around Morant. I don't see a scenario where they're going to do a complete fire sale, trade Jackson, trade Morant, and then just completely bottom out. I don't know that it would be the worst idea. But they're stuck, too, where, look, we're the 8 seed, 7 seed, whatever they were, 8 seed. We're an okay team. We're not a championship team. We're expensive. We're good, but we're not great. So it's 2 teams that are stuck trying to get unstuck.
Yeah, look, the odds for this one, big shifts at a couple different books. FanDuel goes on the Orlando Magic, 37-1 to win the NBA Finals next year, down to 16-1. DraftKings drops 50-1 to 25-1. So we're cutting it in half there with that second one. And I think 2 things can be true from the Orlando perspective. One, Desmond Bain fits a lot of needs that the Magic need in terms of being able to create his own shot, make offense happen in the backcourt, fits around the guys they already have with that really good front court that they've drafted with Banchero, with Wagner. And you're going to throw out a really interesting starting lineup with Wendell Carter, Banchero, Wagner, Bain, and Suggs. You're going to defend. You're going to get into people's shorts. I like the fit. And at the same time, 4 first-round picks is also an overpay. But at the same time, it does feel like the NBA marketplace is such that if there's a player you want, you just go get him. Because if you don't end up getting the guy that you think can make a difference for your team and give up those draft picks, you'll end up finding yourself a new job and having to work your way back up. So I can appreciate the Magic trying to capitalize on this window in the Eastern Conference where they're saying, look, we have a chance to compete here. Whatever it takes to get a guy who fits what we're trying to do, we're going to do that. And Bane's a guy, from a player prop perspective, I backed whenever Ja Morant was out of the lineup, and he was very, very good to me. He produced a lot. You saw he was capable of being a guy that you can run an offense through, and I think Orlando desperately needs someone like that to fill that offensive need in their backcourt. From the Memphis side of things, Will, they couldn't really use Bain properly. He was somewhat buried when you have Morant as your number one guy. I like that they got a ton of picks. They got a veteran in KCP, whatever. That may help them. He's not really the player he used to be right now. But I do like that they got Cole Anthony, a guy who can be like a Desmond Bain light off your bench. Doesn't bring that defense, but brings the offense that Bain was bringing. So I think for Memphis, they didn't get all that much worse despite giving up a good player in Desmond Bain. I don't know if they're going to trade everyone now. I still think that this was a move to compete for now and to also have assets in your back pocket if something else should pop up down the road for you to add to this team. They were a good team. They fired their head coach. I don't think they're going to go full rebuild. I think they're still going for it, even though it does seem like a lot of the Western Conference is currently trying to capitalize on a championship window, Will.
Yeah, I mean, both teams stuck between a rock and a hard place. And both teams, look, this isn't like a win now move, obviously, for Memphis, because when you trade a borderline all-star player, I don't think he's ever made an all-star team, but an all-star-ish player for picks, you can't call it a win now move. But as an asset play, they just got better assets. I think 4 firsts that are unprotected, plus a swap, plus Pope helps you win now. I mean, I know that's not a great contract. That's more. I'd rather have that set of assets than Bain. But I get it from both sides. I can't kill it. I think it's an overpay by the Magic. Again, I'm not trading ultimately 4 ones in a swap for somebody who's not going to win me a championship. We saw what the Hawks did that with DeJounte Murray, throwing the Gobert trade and the Bridges trade, like I mentioned. You just regret that. It's one thing if you're one piece away from actually winning a championship and you're take some of these teams that are in the conference finals, you can sniff it. Hey, one piece, one upgrade here, one more player, and I can actually be holding up the trophy. When your upside is probably like a conference finals at best, I just have a hard time giving up all that assets. But again, I understand it. I understand it. The East is wide open. You've been the 7-8 seed. You've been in purgatory forever. You haven't been to a finals. What was that, 2009? So that's 15, 16 years ago. Never won a championship. What the hell? Who cares about the picks? Let's get the player and let's try to make a run at this thing. I get it.
Desmond Bain costs 4 first-round picks. Mikal Bridges costs 5 first-round picks. Giannis Antetokounmpo costs your firstborn.
Oh boy!
Cash on the side under the table, like a new Rolls Royce. Like, what does it take to acquire Giannis if guys like Desmond Bain are getting traded for 4 first round picks?
At least all of these picks plus one like right now young all star. Or 2 potential all-stars, like a Castle. Like, just say we're doing a Spurs deal.
Yeah.
Castle, the second pick, the 14th pick, a couple more ones. Who's another? Vassell. I mean, you get the idea. Basically, everything a team has, you're going to ask for if you have Giannis.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's why I don't think Milwaukee's going to be able to trade him. There isn't a fair offer outside of what OKC
can. The Spurs trade's not bad. The Spurs trade's close. If you're going to give me Castle, the 2, the 14 – what other young players? I mean, young players, picks next year.
Now, Sohan.
The problem is, if I give you Giannis with Wemby, your picks next year are going to, I mean, you're
going to
get 28
to 30 or
whatever.
Thanks for the
Castle,
last pick in the
Castle
draft.
The number 2, the number 14, whatever other player you can throw in, that's a start. That's not terrible.
All right, I'm sweating something out right here. That White Sox bet's not dead. Runner on second, so scoring position. They're down 2-1 to the Rangers. And I think it's Luis Robert on second. So we got some speed out there. And I don't know, some guy you've never heard of is at the plate for the White Sox. I feel like Bob Uecker in Major League. Some guy you'll never hear from again is at the plate. And if he can just punch one through, he's down 0-2 in the count, I could tie this thing up and potentially cash a plus price. It would just tie the game. While that's going on, I have to tell you, if you're betting on sports, you also got to bet on the ponies. And if you're going to do that, why not try our friends over at First Bet? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races every day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. Sign up at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And use the promo code VSIN200 to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days up to $200. All you have to do is head to firstbet.com today. He's Will Hill. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. We have a 1-2 count. And let's see. Right now, the mark, it's off the board. So this still says the eighth inning, plus 321 on the White Sox. Last it was available, minus 477 on the Rangers. And it's a tough play by the second base. Safe at first. So of runners first and third, two out, hoping to cash a plus 158 on the White Sox. We need this run to tie it, although I don't know if I trust their closer situation. It's been pretty volatile this year, Texas. But that one goes up the middle off the bat of Teal. Simeon makes a nice play, but not enough in time to get Teal at first base. So when we return, we'll find out if that bet is live or dead. An update from the desert, where the San Diego Padres have jumped on top of the Diamondbacks. And any updates coming with the U.S. Open, we'll give them to you coming up next. He's Will, I'm Dustin. It's Live Bet Sunday.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSEN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dustin Sweetelson, Will Hill with you. It's Live Bet Sunday on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. A big day in sports. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there celebrating and all the people who are going to be called daddy later tonight, who maybe in 9 months may be able to start thinking about their next Father's Day. Will shaking his head, not happy with that one. An update when it comes to the U.S. Open. Final round is scheduled to resume at 5:40 p.m. Eastern time, so we're looking at about 25 minutes before we get going again. The leaderboard currently has Sam Burns on top at 2 under, Adam Scott in second at 1 under, and then Tyrell Hatton and Victor Hovland at plus 1 apiece. And Will, I believe you have a piece of Victor Hovland right now, don't you?
Yeah, I tweeted on Friday that I feel bad for Victor Hovland. Poor guy doesn't even know that I have money on him, thus he has no shot. He's just playing out there like he can win. So I feel bad for him, but we'll see. All you can hope for, you take a shot at somebody 60-1, all you can hope for is a chance. So I'm in the mix here. Hasn't played great really since Friday, but with this course, who the hell knows? My question, I'm curious, can they finish this? Because I'm looking, sunset is supposed to be 8:52. Like, when can they play to? Probably 8:20, 8:30. Yeah. At some point, it's going to be too dark to play. Can they squeeze in enough golf here to actually finish this? I'm not sure.
That's a good question. Oakmont Country Club in the Pittsburgh area. The course has been stupid, and I love it. I know, like, golf purists, I don't think love these U.S. Open events where they just try to make it as difficult as possible. But I was looking in my prep for just looking at this event, Will, and the aerial shots of the course, I was like, man, it's a lot of sand. All right, where's the water? Oh, there's no water. Where are all the woods? There's not a lot of trees, but there's just sand everywhere you look. I like how crazy it gets, but obviously betting it, you might as well just take some flyers on some long shots versus going at the top of the board, because there's no reason to bet a short price. Even if it hits, it feels like you're going to have long shots that the playing field has been even by the difficulty of this course.
Yeah, now I have to really sweat this Padres Diamondbacks first 5 under. It was scoreless. I have under 4.5. It's scoreless going into the fourth inning. Hey, pretty good shape here. You're feeling scoreless, you know, barring disaster. Well, 3-run inning from the Padres in the fourth. Now they've gotten a run here in the fifth. A leadoff single, then a double by Arias. And now it's a man on second, nobody out, Machado up. So I went from being in very good shape here to now I am an underdog and a sizable underdog. So it'd be really frustrating to lose this one, but I will try not to to take it out on you or the audience. By the way, the White Sox did not score, so we head to the bottom of the eighth. 2-1, the Rangers leading.
Nah, that's tough. They've had a couple opportunities, a few innings in a row, Chicago, to do something. Like, they're not good, but there are situations to bet them this year where it's like a lot of young guys trying to prove themselves. The Eddie Cuero kid's killing lefties behind the plate. Like, they have some interesting pieces. They just don't have the studs. And Luis Robert's having a horrible season. That guy 2 years
–
his season 2 years ago looks like a massive fluke, or he's just not a motivated guy because they're losing so much. Either way, he's not a guy I'd look to acquire if I was a contending team because of all of that. And on your Padres Diamondbacks thing, I was dead wrong. My read was late with Merrill Kelly. I thought he was going to stay hot. But the Padres' bats look really good. Arise with the hit there. And he does have good numbers against Merrill Kelly. And now Machado getting going. Man, that NL West is just so freaking brutal. All these teams can beat you in some way, and we'll talk about the NL West. Dan Dibley, 95.7 The Game, is going to join us around 6:15 p.m. Eastern. We'll get his thoughts on the teams that scare him the most as a guy up there in the Bay Area. San Diego, if they get Yu Darvish back, it's like maybe they're not what they were last year with that crazy bullpen, but I don't think they're far off. The problem is the Dodgers haven't been healthy. If the Dodgers get healthy, they're still in a different class than everyone else.
Yeah, and they're going to get Ohtani back on the mound soon, we would think. I mean, this has been almost 2 full years since he got hurt. Usually you have the surgery, you know what, a year and you're back. This has been, I understand they have a position where they have the luxury of not having to rush him back, but this is, we're past the point of rushing. It was August of 2023. He's playing for the Angels at this point. Now, this is 3 months before the Diamondbacks Rangers World Series where he gets hurt, and we still haven't seen him since. But you figure he's going to be back some point on the mound. He'll probably make a trade, whether it's Alcantara, who has not been great this year, a little better lately, but has not been great this year. They'll take somebody. They'll find somebody's pitcher, and they do a good job developing pitchers, getting the most out of them. The problem is once they put that Dodger uniform on, for whatever reason, they're on the IL. They're on the shelf very shortly after. Snell, Glass now. Sasaki, I don't know if you saw this. He's not even throwing anymore. They shut down his throwing program. There's no TBD on his return. Gonsolin, I mean, you go down the line. They just have a million pitching injuries. But they're the Dodgers. They'll probably figure out a way to win their, 100, 102 games and win the West and be a very dangerous team in the playoffs. But you got to be concerned with all of their pitching injuries.
Glasnow is like one of the most frustrating pitchers. When he pitches, he's like a top – I'm not exaggerating. He's a top 10 quality pitcher. He's just never available. Yeah. It's so frustrating with him. And then Sasaki – I don't know how motivated that guy is to come back and pitch. He looked like he was seeing ghosts like Sam Darnold back in the day, where I feel bad. The kid looked totally in over his skis. It felt like the pressure of the contract was getting to him. I don't even know what he looks like when he returns, because he was actually getting worse as a pitcher.
Wasn't impressive. I'll put it that way. Impressive.
No. But that's where we stand there with Major League Baseball in the College World Series.
Was he crying in one of the games, after one of the games?
Potentially.
In the dugout or
something? Yeah, like you feel bad because he's a kid and he's in a foreign country and he thinks everything he did. I feel bad for people. I feel bad for people.
I don't feel bad, and I don't think you feel bad. I think it's one of those things where it sounds good to say it. You feel like saying it makes you a good person, but I don't think you actually.
Oh, you think I'm virtue signaling is what you
think
is happening.
Yeah, that's a good word for it.
I genuinely feel bad because the kid came over, probably thought that, like, everything I did in Japan is just going to translate to America. I think I'm awesome. And he's getting a taste of the medicine that he's just like, this is not what I anticipated here. An update from the College World Series. Louisville did come back and beat Arizona. They were plus $1.14 to win the game pre-flop. That is a massive win for the Cardinals, who came back a couple nights ago against Oregon State, lost in the bottom of the ninth inning, and now they end up knocking out Arizona, who was a bit of a darling, a team that we're used to seeing here in the College World Series, but they upset North Carolina to get here, and now they will be sent home. The late game coming up in about an hour and 38 minutes. It's Coastal Carolina and Oregon State. Coastal's 24-game win streak is on the line, Will. They haven't lost since April 22nd. That is freaking crazy. They haven't lost since April 22nd. Oregon State's a team that's almost always here in the big dance. Coastal's the favorite, laying minus 140. Beavers catching 110. So we'll be fired up to watch that one in the College World Series.
Who do you like? Do you like anyone?
I like Coastal. I think Coastal wins the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think Coastal wins the whole thing.
Do you have any money on it? Did you play?
No, it wasn't a huge price. It wasn't a huge price on them.
Okay.
What was it?
I'm trying to think.
I might have screenshotted it on my phone. This is a dangerous
7-8-1, something like that, maybe.
The dangerous game we play of opening up Dustin's screenshots live on the air. It's always a dangerous game of what we might find in there. Some of it's not safe for work, so don't zoom that camera in on me. He's Will Hill. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. A lot of action across the place. The two baseball games ongoing in Major League Baseball, not all that interesting. Seattle up 5-0 in the fifth on the visiting Guardians. On the road, the Padres lead the Diamondbacks 4-0, also in the fifth. And on the Mariners' side of things, I don't know if you've noticed this, but Randy Arozarena starting to hit a little bit for them. And J.P. Yeah. Crawford, who we had the bet on earlier in the game, he's been red hot, having a really good year. The offense is better than it was last year, but you'd still like them to make a move, Will, and add someone to that lineup to help out Cal Raleigh and some of the power production that they lack compared to some of the other teams in the league.
I agree, but and this is what makes Judge, what he's doing, so impressive. The league batting average is like 243, 244, something like that. There's not a lot of hitters. It used to be when we were growing up, you know, 15, 20 years ago, the pitching is the one thing that was hard to find. The hitters, you know what, you can call up any bad team and just get their left fielder, get their five hitter. You're going to get a decent bat. You could find offense. Now, hitting's scarce. I mean, you could just look up and down these lineups. There's one, two, maybe three guys you like in terms of a hitter. This hitting is very, very difficult to come about now with, you know, just the way the game is played and all the velocity, all the movement. It's hard to find offense. So we could sit here, go get a bat. All right. I mean, maybe you could find someone, but it's not that easy. I mean, just look at the bad teams, the Rockies, the White Sox, the Marlins. Who's the veteran bat that's really going to change your life? I'm not sure there's a lot of those guys. And if you have one of those guys as a bad team, you're going to ask for a lot because you're in a position of power.
Yeah, there's scarcity. Scarcity of consistent hitting right now in Major
Good
League
word.
Baseball. It's an issue across the board.
Dearth.
Dearth of talent. It's a great – I only know how to use the word dearth in the phrase dearth of talent. And it's only because of sports.
Yes.
People say it because of sports. I have no uses for it outside of sports. But if you want to know where the money's going when it comes to sports bets – well, you got to go to VSiN.com and check out the betting splits. Unlike other sources, our betting splits come straight from Circa and DraftKings Sportsbook. They show you where the money is going. Circa, known for taking bigger, sharper bets. DraftKings gives you where the public and the broader market nationally is betting. See percentage of bets versus handle on every game across every sport for as little as $9.99. All you got to do is head to VSiN.com/subscribe to check that out. Kevin Durant on the move. Who will be the new Knicks head coach? We'll discuss that next on Live Bet Sunday.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the sports betting network.
An update in the desert and a future that I think could match this conversation. Welcome back in. It's Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the sports betting network. He's Will Hill. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Appreciate you watching us however you may be. YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and, of course, SiriusXM, channel 158. Just a second ago, the Arizona Diamondbacks cut the Padres' 4-0 lead in half. It's now 4-2 in the fifth. And updated number, Diamondbacks now plus 199, minus 270 with the Padres. 10.5 is your total. But the story is, I never know how to say his name, Eugenio Suarez, the third baseman, just mashed his 21st home run of the year, Will. And this is a guy coming into today that I was considering a home run leader bet, looking at FanDuel. If I just throw out a number, if I told you he has 21 homers on the year, what do you think his odds are to lead the majors in home runs?
Oh, so he's got to lead both leagues?
Yeah, lead the majors.
What's the leader have?
All right, the leader, let me give it to you right now, is 1 second. Judge has 26. Raleigh has 26. Otani has 25. Schwarber has 22. Suarez just hit his 21st to be in fifth.
70-1 or something. I think it's higher. Because of the way you're asking, I think it's higher.
He's 100-1.
Normally, I think.
Yeah, he's 100-1.
That's a good number. 100-1, hey. 100-1 is 100-1.
Playing in that desert. And look, we just had Andrew McCutchen came out the other day and said the league is someone within the league or players association told him the ball's different. It's not flying. Well, it's flying for certain people and it's flying in certain stadiums. And perhaps that desert air and that stadium at Chase Field could be playing a role. Now, Suarez is a guy from the right side who's always had elite pop playing back to his Cincinnati days. But I do think he's going to contend here. He's going to be in the conversation. I'd also say Schwarber, who has 22 home runs, he's still 10-1. That's a guy I'd consider because I don't care what's going on with the baseballs, the seams, whatever it is. He's always going to hit for power. I'd consider bets on both of them, 10-1 on Schwarber and 100-1 on Suarez, Will.
I don't have these numbers in front of me. What's Judge?
Minus 110.
Yeah, I can't bet that. I mean, he's a rightful favorite, but odds on, injury possibility. Eventually you get worried they just get, walk on a slump. Minus 110, even though he should be the favorite. They're telling you that that's just throwing up the big red stop sign saying, hey, we don't want any Judge bets. Go bet Judge somewhere else. Go bet somebody else. So there's no value.
If he gets hurt and misses 2 weeks, all of a sudden everything comes back even with the field. So that's a difficult bet to place. Yeah, look, it's 100-1 for a reason. The likelihood is not there, but that's why you don't risk a full unit on it, right? 100-1, you can go at it and attack it in a way where you can make a lot of money on a very little amount placed, right? 10 to win 1,000 in that situation. It's a really – he's an interesting guy. He's behind James Wood, who was 150-1 earlier today. He's now 100-1. And Pete Alonso, 55-1. Suarez, who has more homers than both of those guys, is still 100-1. I just think that number is way too big for the opportunity in front.
I'd agree.
That's all. That's all. That's where we stand there. Want to get into the NBA Finals because we haven't touched on it yet today. There's been so much happening across sports. And in order to frame it, let's look at the series price where Oklahoma City, will they even things up 2-2 on Friday night? They're now minus 450 favorites in the market, plus 350 the other way with Indiana. As far as game five goes, back in OKC, they're 9.5-point favorites. Total's 223.5, so that total just keeps dropping game after game in this one. But despite the series feeling even, doesn't it feel like Oklahoma's up a game or two right now with the vibes?
Felt like whoever was going to win that game four was going to win the series. Agreed. To me, it felt like Oklahoma City won the title on Friday night. I have a lot of fear of underrating Indiana and disrespecting them. You know, they beat the Knicks. They've had these crazy comebacks. They're up 2-1 against OKC, which I didn't see coming. I get all that. But, man, when you're the underdog, when you're the lesser team and you're up 10, up 2-1, and you have a chance to land the knockout punch and the heavyweight champ, even though they haven't won it, the superior team takes your punch right to the cheek, right to the jaw, and punches back. Boy, that's dangerous. I think OKC runs them out of the building in game five. I think OKC probably wins game six. I'd be very surprised. I'm back to where I started at the beginning of the series thing. I'd be shocked if OKC didn't win this series. These games have been closer than I thought. Maybe these two teams are just much more even than I'm, giving credit for here. But I hated that from a Pacers perspective. And how about them not covering the 6.5 after leading 90-95% of the game? They don't cover the 6.5. Brutal beat. Mathurin has a disaster the last minute or two. But I think Indy really missed their opportunity to close that out or take a commanding lead. And a couple things that I've heard a lot of whining about the refs. And look, I had Indiana plus six. I should be the one complaining with everybody else. I didn't think the reffing was as egregious as everyone else. I know there were a lot of fouls called, but the fouls were basically dead even. The free throws were basically dead even until the last minute or so when SGA shot a bunch of them because the Pacers were fouling intentionally. I had no problem with the refs. You can always – it's the NBA. There's a million possessions. You can always quibble calls, non-calls. You slow things down. I didn't have a big issue with that. And I completely disagree with, they're trying to extend the series. They want a seventh game. If you wanted a seventh game, I think you're better off. In Indy going up 3-1.
Yeah.
OKC wins game five at home, and then they're favored in game six. I don't buy this idea that, the OKC won, now that's better for a longer series. I think that's nonsense. I think people just like to complain. People are always looking with a skeptical eye at these things not being on a level, especially when it comes to the NBA. I had no problem with the refs. If you're the Pacers, instead of complaining about the refs, or you're a Pacer fan, instead of complaining about the refs, how about the fact that the last 3:20 you scored 1 point?
Yeah.
OKC clamped down. They locked you up defensively. And if it goes the way I think, and I think the way you think here, and OKC wins the championship, that sequence when OKC was down four, about 3 minutes and change to go, SGA hits a three, they get a stop, and he hits another two. They're up by one. They never look back. That might be the turning point of the series right there.
Yeah, look, the Thunder outscored the Pacers 31-17 in the fourth quarter. It was a taste of their own medicine for Indiana. They've been this miracle team with the comebacks. And I actually think they're to blame more than Oklahoma City capitalizing. I think the stagnant nature of the offense at the worst time possible, they had a flow going. I also thought in the third, Carlisle went away from TJ McConnell too soon. McConnell's been a pest. Yeah. I want more TJ McConnell on the floor. He's making things happen. And then SGA, you talk about the free throws. Two free throws in the first 44 minutes, eight in the final four. And I'm never a big blame the ref guy. Because if you're blaming the ref because of one call in the game, that means there was probably 30 other calls in the game that things were 50-50 and mostly went your way, right? Like, I just think to isolate one call, but I would say this. The push-off and travel that were both not called on one play, that was a no-call. That was a big miss by the refs. And to ensure that doesn't happen again, Rick Carlisle's doing what he needs to do in the media because – if you remember a year ago against the Knicks, Rick Carlisle came out and said, you know, small market teams need to get the same calls that the big markets do also. After that, Indiana got a lot of calls and ended up winning that series. It's not why, but it is a way to manipulate things when you're in a series. So Scott Foster was on the call for last game, and Rick Carlisle talked about the ref at his press conference earlier today.
I think it's awful what some of the things I've seen about the officiating, and Scott Foster in particular. I've known Scott Foster for 30 years. He's a great official. He's done a great job in these playoffs. We've had him a lot of times. And the ridiculous scrutiny that's being thrown out there is terrible and unfair and unjust and stupid.
Rick Carlisle has his back, has Turner's back. Yeah, pretty bold statement.
Well, I thought he was defending Foster.
I said Foster. I meant Turner. Turner.
No, you said Turner. I took that as he's defending Foster, that, hey, don't blame the refs. Foster's a good official. I've known him for 30 years. Let's not blame the officials here. I thought that was the tone of his you know, little spiel there. I hadn't heard that. That was a good clip.
Yeah, it was earlier today. And look, he's going to have the refs not – I don't think they're 100% be on his side – but I do think it's a smart thing to say. Complaining about the refs, especially when you're on the road coming up for the next game, only compounds the situation. Have the refs. I think it's gamesmanship from Carlisle. Will it pay dividends? I don't know. Because speaking of Turners, Miles Turner is useless in this series.
Oof.
He stinks. 0 for 6 from 3, 20% from 3 in the series, 13 points per game. I'm sorry, man. If you're a big man who lives on the perimeter, so you're not giving me the boards that I need to contend, you better be hitting those threes. He's not landing those shots. That is a big issue for the Pacers right now. Miles Turner is a no-show. And then going back home, Oklahoma City keeps getting performances here and there. When Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren play at the level they did late in that game the other night, that's when they are this monstrous team that gets downhill and can suffocate you. As long as those other pieces around SGA contribute, the Thunder are impossible to deal with.
And the fact that the Thunder only were 3 of 17 from 3 and won the game, that to me is just a very concerning statistic from a Pacers standpoint.
We'll stay in the NBA. The odds for the next new Knicks head coach, maybe some of the most depressing odds as a Knicks fan I've ever seen in my life. That's next on Live Bet Sunday.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSEN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it on Live Bet Sunday. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, live from the D in downtown Las Vegas. He's Will Hill out there in Connecticut. Find him over on X at not the Will Hill. I'm at Dustin Sweetelson. And we've got a lot going on this afternoon in Arizona right now. The Padres lead the Diamondbacks 4-2 with one out in the sixth inning. Current market has San Diego laying 388, plus 272 the other way on Arizona. 9.5 your in-game total. In Seattle, the Mariners shutting out Cleveland 6-0 with two outs in the seventh. And if you think Cleveland can mount a six-run comeback, they're 57-1 on the money line right now. That is a big, fat price. But the story is the U.S. Open is back underway after a brief weather delay with some flood conditions there in the Pittsburgh area. So the market did move while we were away, Will. As I'm looking at the leaderboard, Sam Burns with two over today is now two under for the tournament so far. Adam Scott in second place is one under, followed by Hatton and Hovland at one over apiece. But you saw a slight adjustment when it came to the odd screen.
Yeah, maybe even more than slight adjustment. Burns is now odds on at DraftKings $1.40 minus. And this is about a big gap between him and the second place guys I can remember. And I've been following these odds like a hawk, even when I'm not watching the actual coverage, the actual golf, I'm constantly looking at these odds. A lot of the tournament, and he just moved minus 125. So again, these odds fluctuate. But it's been basically Burns and Spawn, Burns up slightly ahead, Burns and Scott today, you know, maybe within, always within like a dollar or so of each other. But the fact that Burns is odds on, the second short shot is Scott at plus 450. That's by far as big a gap as we've seen, I think, all tournament between the favorite in terms of the odds and the second favorite. And then you got Hatton 6-1, Hovland, who I'm rooting for, but losing faith here, plus 850. But I'll say it again, anything can happen on this course. With this course, who knows? It's so challenging that it just brings in so much variance. So I kind of like the fact that we got a delay. No finals game, nothing really on tonight except for, you know, Sunday Night Baseball, College World Series. Without the finals, without the NHL Stanley Cup final, the fact that this is delayed and these guys are on the 8th, 9th hole and we got a bunch of golf ahead of us to close out a Father's Day Sunday here, I think it's I think it worked out well.
Yeah, you like the scheduling? You like that both the NBA and NHL avoided Father's Day? I don't.
I would have liked the NBA game tonight.
I agree. The NBA game tonight would have been the perfect cap to the end of the day on Father's Day.
Yeah. Like, they're trying to extend it as much as possible so the 7th game can be extended and played on a Sunday, I believe, because we go Monday, game 5, Thursday, game 6, which we'll have no matter what, obviously, because it's 2-2, and then we wrap around a Sunday. So, look, they're stretching out as far as they can. I mean, we start last Thursday on June 5th, and the final wouldn't be until June 22nd, game 7.
Okay.
So that's, I mean, 17 days to play a 7-game series. That's about as much as you can draw it out. So I get I'd rather have a game tonight than not, but I get it. They're trying to just keep it so their 7th game, which we haven't had in the NBA Finals since 2016, that great Warriors-Cavs game, I get they're trying to keep it on schedule here and have it be the 7th game lining up with a Sunday, but I prefer a game tonight. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, and you're talking about the schedule. What's so funny is my initial instinct was, wait, we had a trade in the NBA offseason today while the finals are going on. That shouldn't be allowed. But then you realize if this were to go 7, you said, what, game 7 would be the 22nd?
Yeah, today's the 15th. I think a week from today, the 22nd. So
the NBA draft is on the 25th. These teams need to get things in order before the draft takes place. It is brutal, the schedule for the NBA, just grasping to relevancy while they can hold on to it, because they know the second they go away, the NFL just comes in and takes over the headlines. They're just so scared of that, so they have to stretch these finals out. And I'm curious your take of the hockey, because I think it's been awesome, even though Florida has been the better team for most of this.
Sure.
We had the two overtime games. We had the bad game from Skinner, right? I'm enjoying it, and we've had 5 overs in the Stanley Cup final. Lots of action. I'm curious for you. I'm not someone who normally cares about hockey, but I've been glued into every game in the Stanley Cup final so far. Before I get your thoughts, I just want to lay out the market just to – for the audience who don't know how things have shifted since the win the last night for Florida. Right now, the Panthers laying 350 in the series price, plus 280 when it comes to the Edmonton Oilers. And as far as Tuesday's game goes, it's the Panthers minus 148, Edmonton plus $1.24.
By the way, something must have happened because Burns is now plus 140, was just minus $1.40 a minute ago.
Glad I didn't bet it.
Hovland has moved from 850 to plus 550. Scott is at plus 360. Hatton down to 450. So really looking at a four-horse race, unless you think Carlos Ortiz at 12-1 is live. And again, with this course, who knows? Yeah, I thought once Edmonton won game 4 on the road, down 3-0, I thought, which is a dangerous word, I thought they maybe had a little momentum going back home for game 5 and would win that. And I thought these teams either way would split 5 and 6 and we'd have a 7th game. I picked Edmonton at 7 before the series. I'm less confident that we're going to see that seventh game, and that would be on, I believe, Friday, June 20th here, about 4 or 5 days from now. I'm worried. I think Florida probably wraps it up in game six, but who knows? Home ice in hockey is not what home court or home field is in these other sports. These teams, I guess Florida, like you said, has seemed slightly better, but who knows? One game away, all it takes is one win from Edmonton, and then you're hosting a game seven. I'm rooting for a game seven, not just because of my bets. I think it's just as a sports fan to have a game seven NHL Stanley Cup would be a lot of fun. We'll see if we can get it here, but I'm less enthusiastic than I was, you know, 24 hours ago.
Yeah, I really wanted Edmonton to win that one in their home barn, and they weren't able to do so. That would have given us the juice we needed. It feels like Florida's up 3-2. It feels like they're like this close to just putting them away. It's really crazy, because I think when we frame this Panthers team, I think there's a case to be made. This is currently in all of American, Canadian sports, North American sports, this is the deepest team going. They just have so many options to go after Edmonton. And it's showing the weaknesses that Edmonton has defensively and, more importantly, in net. Stuart Skinner benched for Calvin Pickard, and we saw it kind of play out the same. Brad Marchand can't stop scoring, and Sam Bennett scored again. Sam Bennett, fifth goal in 5 games this series, second player since Super Mario to do that in a final, 15th of the playoffs, fourth player to ever do that, 13th road goal. I mean, the guy is out of his freaking mind. And then Marchand, 37 years old, as a 40-year-old, I know I'm speaking about a 37-year-old like he's 80, but he's doing remarkable things. He has 10 goals, 10 assists, 20 points this postseason run, a plus 18 plus minus, 3 game winning goals, and he's currently plus 450 for the Conn Smythe. The only reason he's not favored is because Bennett, who I mentioned, is scoring goals left and right. He's minus 220 right now. Man, if you think Edmonton can win this series, I think you have to think about McDavid at 9-1 in Conn Smythe. But I think if you're thinking about Edmonton winning this series, you're crazy. I know they came back with a deficit a year ago. I don't see the energy. I don't see the defense. And right now, everyone is scoring on whoever's in net for the Oilers. I think this thing's done. I think the Panthers wrap it up in game five or game six.
Why aren't we just betting the over every game? I know it's square, but 5-0 now to the over. And how gross is that? If you took a shot on the under, and I'm not sure why you would have liked the under yesterday, but look, everyone's got their reasons for betting it. If it was that obvious, could have bet a lot of money on the over. So I don't mean it to come off like that. But watching this series, it just feels like it's an over fest. And man, what was it, 2-0 heading into the third, and then 5 goals. And once you start to get, the third, the fourth, the fifth, you're just always a better thinking, how can I lose this? Well, you saw how you can lose that. That's a tough one if you had the under last night.
I think this would be the point where we start thinking unders, Will, just because I think the approach will shift for the Oilers because elimination is on the line here. And I do think things tighten up in that aspect where I think they change their defense. I think the defense has been as much to blame for the issues in net for the Oilers, similar to I was criticizing Anthony Edwards in the Western Conference Finals, but not factoring in that part of his struggles was Oklahoma City and the way they were approaching him defensively. I think Stuart Skinner was facing a barrage of shots, and the Florida offense just kept coming and coming. I think Edmonton has to take a more defensive approach because I think the under could be in play, but I'm not running to the window to bet it. I'm not. No shot there. If you want a good deal, this is probably the craziest deal I think I've ever seen us promote here on VSiN, and that is the all-in at Circa Las Vegas package. The ultimate getaway package is just $400. You'll get a 2-night stay at Circa, a $100 dining credit, a $100 beverage credit, and your own day bed at Stadium Swim where the party never stops. It's all for $400. Resort fees and taxes have been included. It's a limited time offer, so you got to get in now through September 4th. Don't miss out. Lock in your all-in summer package over at CircaLasVegas.com. He's Will Hill. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Plenty more to get to, including a preview of Sunday Night Baseball in about 20 minutes with Dan Dibley from 95.7 The Game in the Bay Area. We've got 2 live baseball games we're monitoring, plus the U.S. Open. How does this thing finish out? Does Sam Burns hold on? And, of course, we have to discuss the marketplace for Kevin Durant's new team and the New York Knicks' next head coach. It's embarrassing. That's on the other side of Live Bet Sunday.